Welcome to the Relationship Recovery Podcast, hosted by Jessica Knight, a certified life coach who specializes in narcissistic and emotional abuse. This podcast is intended to help you identify manipulative and abusive behavior, set boundaries with yourself and others, and heal the relationship with yourself so you can learn to love in a healthy way.
Hello, and as always, thank you so much for being here. Today, I have a special guest. I have Ben Taylor back on the podcast. I believe this is his fourth podcast with us, and he's here to talk about a topic that I truthfully didn't know as much about as I do now, but it is about the discard. And the discard is something that happens in narcissistic abuse when basically the relationship ends and you're left feeling lost and confused and frustrated and gaslit and trauma bonded. And it can be one of the most painful things to go through. And it's one of those things that just doesn't make sense. Like, it's one of those things that just does not make sense. And it's not meant to make sense, right? Like, this stuff is not meant to be normal. And so, in the context of narcissistic abuse, it is one of those things that happens a lot, and it gives us words to talk about. But in the grand scheme of things, of healthy relationship, it is absolutely not normal. And just to clarify, and Ben will end up clarifying this in the episode, the discard is an abrupt ending or abandonment of a relationship by the narcissist. And so this is usually after devaluing and taking any benefits that they desired from that person. You might be left with bills to pay, tickets to cancel, things to sell, a home to pay for, a child to share with this person, a life that's gone. And many times it's because the narcissist no longer can get that emotional high from their partner. Everything starts to become worse and then they're gone. And it's something that is like the most horrific, demeaning, and awful things to experience. And so that being said, you know, when you listen to this, the purpose of this episode is really to help you understand what you're going through, why it feels so shitty, and what you can do to begin to make sense of it. And at the end of this episode, Ben gives a really amazing tool to work through the story that you're telling yourself and beginning to craft a new story. And I actually did his activity. At the end of the episode, I'll also share what came up for me when I did it. As always, you are not alone in this. You have support. And just to clarify, my tendency in relationships was to hang on into the bitter end until I was like basically dying in the relationship before I left. And then I was discarded, and I was discarded once. Usually it was like abuse, then I leave. So with the discard, I remember feeling like I will do anything to get this person back right now, but they're not good for me. So I felt so trauma bonded. I felt so uncomfortable. I felt so lost. And it took me a bit. It probably took me about 3 weeks, but this also happened when I had a lot of knowledge and just didn't see it. So once I was past that little period of like pure shock, I started to go through and look at all the behaviors. And then I started educating myself about a lot of the signs I was seeing, which were so different than signs I'd saw before. Because like I said, it was different. It was dizzying. And if you've been discarded, I'm going to imagine that you may have Googled what a narcissist is, what kind of narcissists there are. And I'm sure you may have seen that there are different kinds. And so sometimes it's so covert, you don't know until you're out. So the education that you can get will help so much. Understanding them doesn't fix them. Understanding them is not going to bring them back. Understanding them is not going to make this a healthy relationship, you know, but understanding what happened will help you depersonalize it, which is probably the thing I care about the most, is that you are not taking this with you. And that you're not up at night wondering, was it you? Could you have loved more? Could you have done more? Could you have been better? If you had just folded their laundry and didn't say anything, would it be different? If you had just never invited, told them that they need to come with you to your parents' house, would it be fine? If you just like didn't ask them to do anything for a week or like ask them to take care of their responsibilities, would it have been okay? If you loved more, forgave more, did more? The answer is no, you know, but it wasn't you. And I, without knowing you, without knowing your story, I can tell you, if this episode resonates with you, if you're like, oh my God, that's what I just went through, I can tell you it was not you. But I have also been up for many nights wondering if it was me and if I had just done all these things and if I had just been another person. If I had just not been myself, if I just didn't have my boundaries, would this have gone differently? And the truth is that it will always end here. Because a narcissist will always keep upping the expectations. And so with that said, I hope this episode is helpful. And at the end, Ben touches on how you can find him. And I highly suggest that you reach out to him if his work resonates with you. And if you want to reach out to me to begin to heal, to work on healing, you can always find me at emotionalabusecoach.com, on Instagram at emotionalabusecoach, and you can email me at jessica@jessicanightcoaching.com. Hi, Ben. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Can you share with us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my name is Ben Taylor. I'm a self-aware narcissist on this platform to help provide awareness of narcissistic abuse and ultimately to help women who are trapped in toxic, narcissistic, abusive relationships find freedom mentally, emotionally, and physically so they can actually move forward in their growth and development into who they're called to be. So I provide a lot of different insights on different social media channels and opportunities to be able to run faster with people that work with me or work in the coaching space that want to continue to grow and develop themselves from that place of being trapped to ultimately freedom.
Yeah. And I think that one of the most valuable things that you offer on social media channels that sort of led me to you a few years ago was that you share a lot of education about the ins and outs of what happens in narcissistic abuse so that we can begin to depersonalize it when it's happening to us.
Right.
And so today I wanted to kind of go off of that and dive into the narcissistic discard. And being in my role as a coach, I get a lot of people that will reach out to me of like, how do I heal from a discard? You know, sometimes I'll get a DM that says just that. And I guess the first thing that comes to mind when I see a question like that, and I don't reply with this, but I guess this is where my thought goes. It's like that the discard is actually part of the cycle of narcissistic abuse. And so I want to dive into the discard today because I think it's so confusing. And right before we got on, you know, I shared that it's like one of those things that it's like so hard to not take personal, or it's like a personal attack, or like there's something wrong with us. And so can you just explain what the discard is?
Yeah. So sometimes the discard can have different looks or different appearances in how the person is discarded. And when we talk about the narcissistic cycle, typically discard would be the third, sometimes the final, but oftentimes the third phase in the narcissistic cycle of idealization, devaluation, discard. And a lot of times I'll add recycle when the narcissist comes back and hoovers back into the relationship. But the discard can have many different appearances or many different looks. It could be him just completely ghosting you and there's no communication. You have no clue what happened. All of a sudden he was there and then all of a sudden he wasn't. It could be him breaking up and communicating that of like, I don't want this relationship anymore. I don't think that this is working out. It could be him saying, I'm not good for you. I think this is something that you deserve better, and kind of playing almost like a victim role and pushing you away. And then sometimes that leaves the door open to, oh, let's still be friends. And then there could be a reverse discard where he's making your life hell so that you leave him. And that's actually the intent for him to do. So I say that to be able to say like discard being the third piece of the cycle sometimes can appear and look different ways. But at the end of it, you have you who has been in a relationship and then you no longer have that person and you've been let go, discarded, like ghosted, and you're left alone kind of wondering and thinking, what just happened? Like, did this person care about me? Did they not care about me? And That's where all the thoughts start to cycle up and to spin off of, what in the world did I just go through? What just happened that this person just dumped me like a sack of potatoes, right? And all of a sudden you have no clue. And that's where it feels super personal. But to answer the question, like discard, third stage of the narcissistic cycle, and this aspect of the other person disappearing, leaving, rejecting, letting go, but a lot of times more in an abrupt or a very blunt or curt type of way that produces a lot of questions and a lot of confusion of what just happened.
Yeah. And when you were going through those, like the ghosting, communicating, we're done, I'm not good for you, you deserve better, or even reversing it. Sometimes I've seen it where all of those things happen almost like, maybe not at once, but like within a few days. I had this one client where he was like trying to do the reverse discard for like, it was like, it almost like came out of nowhere. And then she was like, what the hell is going on? And then it turned into the victim of like, I'm not good for you. So she was like totally spent, like exhausted. And then was like, then it was like, I'm not good for you. You deserve better. You should just leave. And then it was like, okay, actually I'm done. And you actually did all these things. I'm fine. You're the one who's not okay. You should go get help. And then it was ghosting. And she was like, what the hell just happened? And I think I think it's important to name that this can happen from a very short relationship or a very long one. Like this has happened in marriages as well, where people are just done. I'm curious.
It could happen as short as like a 2-month relationship or a 39-year relationship. We've seen it either way, where all of a sudden the person just like almost looks like they snap in one sense and just is all of a sudden out.
What is going on for the narcissist when they do that? What are they protecting within themselves when they just act in that way, when they're led to do the discard?
So I'm not going to speak to like the 39-year marriage because sometimes that has, I think, different factors. But
let's do in general, the one-year relationship version.
Right. In general, like the shorter, like 3 months to 5 years, like that kind of thing, like those type of relationships, typically there can be several different things. There could be this piece of exposure, of you're getting close to the truth of exposing who he actually is. So it's easier to discard than it is to own that. Sometimes there could be the piece of there's a cycle that he might already have inside of the relationship where he's already kind of pushed people away, kind of the back and forth, and it's the next step. Or there's another person. In narcissistic abuse, and a lot of what I work with are women who've been cheated on, right? Because that's a lot of times what is ingrained in there. Sometimes there's the piece of the discard where it's like this mental piece of you're getting too close to me vulnerably. And inside a relationship with a narcissist can only go so deep before they actually have to work on the inner stuff. And so it's typically this topical relationship with lots of highs and lows in the topical section, but not into the deep heartfelt section. He's typically just doing the words and actions to be able to get what he wants. And so when sometimes it gets closer of, hey, this relationship needs to progress, it's like, and I'm out, because that's going to take a deeper level of vulnerability, or that's going to take love to a whole nother place of truth and honesty and vulnerability to be able to have the relationship work. So instead he's like, nope, out. It's hard because there's not one answer to the discard. Right. Like there's so many different versions of what's happening. I think the best way to kind of sum up every single version that we can concoct about a narcissist doing a discard, and this is probably the one that most people are going to struggle with, is the discard's not about you.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest piece with it, because inside the moment, there's typically something that the narcissist is like, I'm going to get exposed. I have to get vulnerable. Something has to change inside of me. I want to go be with someone else. And the list goes on. And they're all I-based. Like they're based on like what I want in the moment, not on the other person. Now, in order to make himself feel better, it has to be about the other person. So if I'm going to discard you, I'm like, hey, I have to change this around so that in my mind, I'm not the bad person. So what can I paint a picture that makes you look like the bad person, makes you look abusive, makes you look like I can't be with you anymore because of what you've been doing to me, et cetera, so that I feel better about myself. And it's hard because people view that as a personal attack, when in reality, it actually has nothing to do with the other person. It has all to do with the narcissist and preserving, whether that's internally his image, whether that's externally his image, whether that's just the mindset of that he's always right. there's a litany of different pieces, but that falls into the aspect of discard and oftentimes a couple of the reasons why it's coming up, sometimes what it's stemming from, and then ultimately the piece of him just wanting to pull back for him, not for any other reason.
Yeah, I think a lot of what you said was really helpful and validating because, like you said, people see it as a personal attack, but there's this like fear that I'm hearing you talk about around like they don't want to be exposed, which I think when like on Instagram and other places, when we talk about the discard, it's usually in relationship to a new supply, which I mean, like you said, you work with a lot of women that have been cheated on. I work with a lot of women that sometimes that's in there, but it's not always like the discard happens actually in those other two categories of like, they've been exposed, you know, in a way of like, hold, like, you know,
right.
They've been together a year or so. So the wheels have fallen off the bus and you're like, why are these wheels off the bus? And then they're projecting on. And then you're like, okay, I'm not all these things, or I didn't do that. Or like, what do you mean? Or like, that's not how it went, you know, so there's gaslighting and then they can call out the gaslighting or they try and take care of themselves. And then that's usually when they find me and then we start to put pieces together. And then while this person is getting stronger and sticking to their guns, this person bolts in some way. And I think that's an important point. And I'm glad that you framed it because I think when we focus on, oh, they just need new supply, it's like, and I want you to correct me because you're the expert in this area, is that like, it feels like the supply actually could just be like themselves. Like they have recreated this story and that new story that they created where now they feel empowered to leave is the reason why they're like, okay, all of this wasn't working. I'm not like, we're not going down to these levels. I need to maintain this sense of self. So I'm gone. And my new supply is me continuing the story as I go on in the world.
That's interesting. What I would say from my perspective, which obviously is just my world and my perspective, it would be, I don't see a lot of narcissists that want to be alone without some form of supply. Supply doesn't have to be a person, but typically you're not going to see a narcissist be their own supply because they don't have the self-validation piece to validate themselves.
I'm going to clarify that. I agree. I totally agree with you. When I said supply, and I should have clarified this before, but when I said supply, I was thinking it about it in that way as a new person, but I'm really glad you just said what you said. That is part of what I was trying to get to. So maybe it's not that they feel it, that they're like, oh, like I'm the new supply. It's more like, I'm not worrying about all this other shit I was worrying about in this relationship or focused on or thinking about or like trying to maneuver around. But now my supply is either spending or now it's going to be work, or I'm going to tell myself or like whatever it could be. That's sort of what I meant, is like it didn't have to be a person. It could be a new focus that they have that they're putting energy into that they could have had energy into the entire time in the relationship. But now it's
Most of the time it would be energy and do something that would either fall under a category of some type of addictive nature or would fall under some category of still people interaction. Because a lot of supply might not be another person per se, but is still always going to be reflected back to image. Mm-hmm. And whether that's image internally, that image can't be validated without external force. So in that regard, if it's like, oh, I'm going to throw myself into work, yeah, because he's getting supply off of being successful in work and people noticing that, him looking like the good person, him being the successful entrepreneur. There's this piece of the supply that might not be necessarily a person, but it is still coming from validation, acclamation, like, oh, like he's doing so well in this, which still comes from people. Like you don't have a wall being like, hey, good job today. You know, like it's still coming from people in that regard. And then you can have different pieces of it being like addictive in nature, as far as maybe like spending or gambling or things like that. But the majority of times it's still centered around people and validation. And so just to clarify part of it, I don't see a lot of narcissists that are solo narcissists. Like you don't see a narcissist as a hermit, right? Because at that point there's not validation and they don't have the own internal validation. So typically a supply is going to be a person or something that's still associated with people that's making himself feel better about himself, but not necessarily his own self validating himself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's like there's all of the things that their supply is rooted in is in validation in some way. And so like, even if they had, you know, say they went and spent money on like say they were addicted to buying clothing or they were very focused on their outer self-image, it would be so that other people would give them that validation in some way, not correct. So that they were separate and like proud of themselves as themselves, which points back to the insecurity mm-hmm. deep inside.
And it's also at such a subtle level that typical people wouldn't see it and wouldn't understand it. So for instance, he goes on a spending spree and buys himself a cool car and buys himself a bunch of cool clothes. The thought process then is he dresses in those clothes, he drives that car, and his thought process is, look what people see in me. Look how amazing I am. Walking down the street and someone glances at the shop behind him, he views that person looking at him and he's like, yeah, that's right. Like, you're looking at me. All mm-hmm. of a sudden, it's this image piece that he's putting up that he's using other people's reflections to validate his own insecurities, to make himself feel better, and to try to be able to hide the void inside of his life and his heart that he has by trying to fill it up with things and people and places and all these kind of validations that will never fill him up completely. But a lot of times people won't see it in this outward piece of, oh, this person gave him a compliment. He could also be walking down the street and view someone looking at him, and he would take that and manipulate just a look, just a glance, to try to be able to boost his fragile ego.
Yeah. I'm wondering, when we think of how narcissistic abuse could be in a cycle, you know, if I Google cycle of narcissistic abuse, like they typically have arrows that go to each, you know, place. So if we were to say that narcissistic abuse is a cycle, mm-hmm. I like to help people feel prepared. So that's where this question is coming from. I'm not like, oh, are they going to come back? You know, mm-hmm. My hope is always that people get stronger in between and they heal and then they don't go back to it. But when we're in mm-hmm. like almost like they're discarded, I wonder if that validation that they're getting, it starts to get stale. It starts to wear out. Does that lead them to then hoover back in? Is that like whatever was giving them that supply is no longer there? Because in the cycle, as I've seen it, is like the love bombing, idealization, devaluation, which to me feels mm-hmm. like tensions rising if we relate it back to the cycle of domestic abuse, right. Then the discard. So where in the cycle of domestic abuse, it would be the abusive incident. Here it's discard and then mm-hmm. hoovering. And so I guess I'm curious in your perspective, if a narcissist is going to come back, is it because that supply, that validation, wherever they went, you know, the new clothes, the gambling, the whatever has run dry, run stale, and now they're trying to suck you back in? I guess like what I'm really asking is like, at what point does it become part of a cycle where you can have repeated discards?
Repeated discards, meaning there would be the same person coming back to you over and over. And at what point does it become
continuing
a cycle
to hurt
for the narcissist? Or,
for the narcissist,
or
yeah.
For the person that...
No, with the... So the victim, like, if I think about mm-hmm. this from the victim's perspective, when they break up with somebody or they get discarded, usually they're trauma bonded. All they want is that person back right now. Right. I've been there. I'd rather give my right arm than to feel any of the feelings that I'm feeling in that moment. Mm-hmm. But I think that in healing... I've seen this with a lot of clients. I've also seen this in myself, is that as I start to heal, as they start to heal, there becomes a step in the healing where they're now afraid that this person is going to come back because they're not strong enough yet to fully say no, leave, block the door, but they're close to it, or they are strong enough, or like they're sick of this person and like whatever that might be. There's like a whole host of things that could be in that area. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes knowledge of what could happen, a possibility, is helpful so that if they start to see the narcissist, quote unquote, being nice, that they're not actually being nice. They haven't changed. They haven't like hit their head, you know, and like now they're a brand new person. It's they are right. Hoovering back in which if you let yourself be hoovered, then you get back into the cycle that's probably going to result in a discard. Mm-hmm. So if we have the knowledge going into it and we're aware of it and we can see it and we get, you know, by watching your content, listening to this podcast, doing things like that, you're pretty clear about where things are, then I'm curious, what leads a narcissist to start to hoover somebody in? What's going on for them there? Is it another way to chase for validation?
Could be chasing validation, could be chasing validation through control of another person. Like, I miss the control I used to have over that person because I don't have another person to control in this moment. It could be that the validation they were getting from work or something else was lackluster. It could be they went to another person, another supply, and that didn't pan out the way that they thought it was going to. So they cycle back. There could be a lot of different pauses in one sense, but typically it's this piece of trying to come back to a person to either feel better about themselves, whether that was they did the discard, they got exposed, so they kind of like reverse discard. So they're like trying to reestablish themselves as being a good guy, a good person, that kind of thing. Or you could have coming back into the relationship to control and manipulate. So they validate why I'm a good person. It could be to control, manipulate the emotions. So then, Oh, I came back, but you're a crazy person now, so I can't be with you. It's a lot of different pieces with it, but it would stem back to the piece of the narcissist needing some form of validation. And whether they didn't get it from someone else, it dried up, it wasn't enough. It could just be they're bored and they want to go back and mess with another pawn, like mess with another person. A lot of times I'll use like the toaster illustration. Is the narcissist views you as an appliance, as a toaster. So when you're not doing what he wants you to do, then he'll go find another toaster. He'll go find another form of validation supply. But it doesn't mean that he's gotten rid of you. A lot of times he'll still come back to be like, maybe you figured out your lesson now. Maybe you'll actually do what I want you to do. Maybe I can control the way I want you to control. Maybe I can get the sex that I want from you. Whatever it might be, there's typically a validation piece. And the hard part on the other side is that cycle will always continue until that person stops it. It's not up to the narcissist to stop it because he pretty much never will. And especially if a person keeps allowing it or keeps opening the door or hasn't transformed their mindset, then they'll always be stuck in this loop and the cycle over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it just sort of puts an exclamation point on why learning the patterns and seeing it and doing all that self-work, like your thoughts, your life, your self, not letting it be personal, ungaslighting yourself is so important to not be stuck in that cycle. It's always amazing to me when we have these conversations, and this is, I think, our third or fourth one. I think it's our fourth one, that how selfish a narcissist is. And as you've talked through some of these patterns, and I'm taking notes like a psychopath over here, because I'm like, a lot of like things are like, you know, I think it's so helpful. I think it's going to help so many people. And I think it's always amazing how selfish a narcissist is, because I think for someone who's like empathetic, kind, you know, tries to be a good person, tries to live in integrity, it's so hard to think that somebody would do all these things without any regard for the other person. Does the narcissist even thinking about the other person when all of this is going on?
Typically not.
Yeah.
Typically it is only looking at himself in the moment. It's not this piece of how is this going to affect someone else? Like, how is this going to impact them? Like, how is this going to hurt them? And you see this with the conversation of intention, the narcissist being like, well, it wasn't my intention to hurt you, but at the same time, it wasn't his intention not to hurt you. So it's still there. Like, he's still doing it in a way that it's going to hurt you no matter what. It's just you didn't have a thought in his mind. Mm-hmm. You didn't really matter. And that's one of the pieces, because people hear that and they're like, oh, that means I don't matter. Like, No, you just didn't matter to him because he doesn't actually care about other human beings except for himself. And it's easy for people to get it skewed and get confused inside of this, because then they're attaching their worth and their value based on how another person sees them or another person even validates them, to use the same kind of word. But inside that moment, it gets really confusing, because then people are stuck thinking like, oh, he didn't care about me. And the easiest answer is, you're right, he didn't. Because All he cared about in the moment was himself. And all he looked at in the moment was short-term payoff. So what do I need to do in this moment to just get what I want?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like really accepting the reality of, it brings us to like really accepting the reality of, this is who this person is. Like, this is who this person is. Mm-hmm. We've said before, like, you've changed, you went through the process of change. And I, you know, you said on other podcasts, it's an everyday process for you. It's not something that can just be like left on the back burner. It's not like one day you wake up, you're not narcissistic anymore. It's like, it's an everyday process. And most people don't commit to that work. And so it just It's like acceptance of the fact that like this person, no matter how much you love them, care about them, or trauma bonded to them, they will not change to see you as a human being.
Right. 100%. Because that's not their focus, their modality, or their view or perspective of life at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of my clients asked this question, and I said I would ask it because I do hear it a lot, but it is, how can somebody swear that they'll love you forever and then discard you?
That's huge.
Yeah.
The easiest way to be able to say this is that they're a liar.
Yeah.
And so you walk into that premise thinking, well, they've told me that they're going to love me forever. They've sweared this. They've promised this. And that's all operating on the thought process that they're a man of their word. They're a person of their word. When in reality, narcissists aren't. Like, they're typically liars, cowards, cheaters, abusers, like go down the list, right? But they're typically not going to be telling the truth because the truth is too vulnerable, is too hard for them to actually hear, feel, experience. And so as a result, they're going to run away from it. So part of it is in the question about how can someone swear they will love you forever and then discard goes back to the same piece that they didn't actually tell the truth. Like, they didn't actually swear that they were going to love you forever because that was just their version of it. That was just their willingness to be able to see, I'll use you forever and then I'll discard you. That would probably be a better accurate description of what they're actually saying in the moment. But obviously a narcissist isn't going to say that. They're going to say, I love you, because that fits better into society. That sounds better. And that's what other people want to hear in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually they say it so soon that you're like taken aback, and then you're like, oh wait, but they said that, you know, 7 days into dating, you know, and it meant so much. But you said something about like the expectations that they have of us. And I think that's a very big thing too, because something when we're healing, especially from a discard, something that is so confusing, and like you're in that state that you said really well about, you know, you're in this state where like you can't let go of this thinking and the thoughts of like, is this real life? And all of those things that are going on. I've seen this with a lot of people. It goes into like, what if I didn't do enough? What if I didn't love them enough? They kept asking to spend every moment of every day with me. And I said no. And I prioritized my work and I did these things. And like, maybe I was just too tired, or I should have done this. And it's like, I think that really becomes very dizzying for people, because they start to internalize that it was them. Right. And like, it must be something wrong with them. And that's actually the doorway that brings a lot of people to me to do this work. And that's probably one of the first things that we do, is like un-gaslight a lot of that stuff of like, you showed up as you, but you also were showing up as you were being abused, right? So you can't, and these expectations, I'm always hearing them as like, they're so large and they're so big, and the narcissist doesn't have them for themselves in the way they have them for other people.
For sure. You know, it's very hypocritical of what they view you need to do versus what like he needs to do, and vice versa. A lot of times, you're right. Like, you'll see this with almost everybody that we talk to. They need this form of clarity to first understand that it wasn't them, because they're taking on so much of the blame and responsibility, and they're putting it on themselves, making themselves feel like they're the ones that messed up. They're the ones that did this. And oftentimes it's initially just believing the story, believing the lie that the narcissist has put on them, that it was already projecting, saying, hey, it's your fault. Like, this is your problem. So they believe it to start off with, but then they start telling themselves their own lies and their own stories. And this is where it gets really dangerous, and where you have people that have broken away from a narcissistic abuse, or they've been discarded and they still haven't healed. A year, two, 5 years down the road, they're in the same exact spot. They're just not with him. And inside of this, it's all on the stories that they're telling themselves, because we're all made up of, well, like, the story you tell yourself is what you believe about yourself. And so the more people are able to realize that oftentimes what they're telling themselves is based on feelings, is based on projection from the narcissist, is based on lies from him, and based on your own lies that you believe based on your own perspective and your own frame of reality. So people will come in, they'll be like, hey, I think it's my fault because this happened. This actually came up 2 weeks ago in a group coaching call. One of the ladies said, I still am struggling with this trigger that I could have done something different. And I was like, okay, let's talk about this. How long were you together? And I don't remember what time it was. It was like 30 years. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I tried to talk to him so many times. I'm like, how many times did you try to talk to him? She's like, probably at least once a month. I'm like, okay, add that up. How many times is that over 30 years? So then we have a number of, this is how many times she tried. And then we get to the really the core crux of the problem, and she held him accountable, and that's why he left. So the thought that she's been playing through her mind is, I did something wrong because I said it wrong. I could have done it different. I could have done it better. And then me being able to break it down and just have her understand, hey, in the past 30 years, you've had at least 360 conversations with him, and we're going to base all of your logic off of the one time. That's where we need to understand, because he didn't listen to you all the other times and you kept changing your approach. You tried to ask him different. You tried to ask nicer. You tried to write it down. You tried to communicate it inside, outside, all these different ways. And so it's really this piece of walking her back to what's the story you're telling yourself. And part of it was, I screwed up because I didn't communicate right. Like, it was my fault because I messed up in the communication because it pissed him off. When in reality, she had tried to change all of her communication 360 times.
Yeah.
And he still didn't care. And so when she started to see the facts of the situation of, wait a second, it's actually not this one time. It's the litany of times that I tried to communicate and he wouldn't receive. He didn't want to hear. And I tried and I adjusted and modified everything. It puts a different perspective. So when people are able to look back on the relationship, and I'll ask them, how much did you change for him? And then how much did he change for you? And typically there's a giant gap. Is it when we're dealing with narcissistic abuse, there's always a giant gap because he's always going to move the bar. And people get confused about this because they think, if I would achieve this level, then I'll be good. I'll be accepted. I'll be loved. He'll care about me, which oftentimes is just a foreshadowing of like their own trauma or their own abuse or their own emotional things that haven't been worked on before the relationship that we have to go back and work on too. But inside the piece of raising the bar, the narcissist will always raise the bar so that he doesn't have to deal with the fact that it's him. So like, if I raise the bar saying, we'll just use numbers. If I say the bar of like, hey, you need to operate at a 25, and then you get to a 25, then I'm like, I have to raise the bar. You have to actually go to a 30. Then you have to progress. You have to go 5 more points till you get to 30. You get to 30 and I'm like, no, you have to go to 45 because that's actually the bar. That's actually where I want you to be. And what's happening here is whenever you quote unquote level up to the narcissist's expectations, there becomes this stasis mode of where you're actually fulfilling his expectations. You're fulfilling the obligations that he set. And in that moment, there's this small realization that if you meet all of his expectations and the relationship is still crappy, then it must not be you and it must be him. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, he's like, you can't deal with that shame, guilt, can't deal with that feeling. So actually it's the bar. We need to raise the bar higher. And so then you're always trying and you're never finding a place where you actually reach this level where the expectations are actually met and you're good enough. It's always this piece of trying to make sure you're always trying, always progressing, making him feel safe and secure because you're validating him, because you're following after him, because you're seeking him, you're running after what he set for you to do. He's controlling you. The list goes on and on in that regard. But that's the piece of always raising the bar, because if you actually met his expectations, then he'd have to realize that it's not you, it's actually him.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I like what you said about the story, about let's get to the truth of the story and the way that you described that you did that with your client. I wanted to ask you about, like, is there a tool? I know you have a lot of tools in the work that you do in your program, but so obviously I don't want you to give them all away for free, but like, I think that sounds like a really good one to just name and frame of, if somebody is going through the discard and they're second guessing all the ways in which they showed up, to really get very clear and honest about the story.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And yeah, I don't mind sharing stuff because just having people understand the information is huge. And then what they do with it, obviously, is on them of how they want to be able to progress in their mindset and applying it. And then we take it to a whole nother level with accountability and helping bring people into community that actually helps support and lift them up. So we actually teach inside of part of our program, we teach what's called the Freedom Formula. And that's actually a tool that helps walk people through finding the story, which we found is, inside of narcissistic abuse, is the hardest thing. People will tell you, oh, I know my story, it's this. And 10 times out of 10, it's not that. it's something that they're saying, but we have to go about 3 levels deep than that actual story to figure out what's actually going on. Because they might be saying something about him, something about themselves, And it might boil down to the fact of, because he left me, I'm not good enough. Yeah. Or he left me for another woman, so therefore I'm not worthy. But there's all these different pieces that typically will come back, having a story that might have him and them in the conversation, but typically reflects back on themselves, which is the only thing that we can actually change and heal and grow and transform. So finding that story is absolutely essential, but it's hard for people to do it. So I'll walk you through it really quick. I don't mind. Yeah. I don't mind sharing. So consider it this way. And whoever is listening, like, grab a piece of paper so you can write this down. The first thing we're doing is we want to just identify a trigger. It might mm-hmm. be the biggest trigger that's happening in your life. It might be the smallest. We just need to find one, and we're going to stick in that exact path. We're going to stay on that same path of that trigger. So something just happened that triggered you, spiraled you out, frustrated you, confused you, like put you in a state of anxiety, panic, whatever it is. Identify the trigger, write it down on the piece of paper. Next, after that, you want to be able to identify, what are the emotions that are coming up inside that trigger? Easiest way is to be able to Google and pull up like a negative emotion wheel. Typically going to have about six to eight emotions in the center of the wheel. Then it'll kind of go out to another spoke of a bunch of more emotions, then another spoke of a bunch more emotions. You identify in that trigger, what's the main emotion? You know, is it alone? Is it sadness? Is it anger? Whatever it might be. Figure out that main emotion. Then you're inside that pie slice of the wheel of, okay, now I'm dealing with anger. So then you move out to the next section. There's more anger, and move out the next section, there's different words describing anger. You write down all the things that fall under that trigger and that particular emotion. So you might have one, you might have 20 different emotions. You narrow those down to three emotions. And then from there, you drop them into what we call feeling statements. So how that sounds would be, I feel blank because blank. So in that same piece, it would be, I feel emotion, so anger, because he left me for another woman. Or I feel frustrated because he ghosted me and I don't know what's going on. And so you take three of those emotions and you list all three out in these feeling statements. So I feel something, I feel something, I feel something, because you list all those three out. Then you sit with all of it. This is the hard part, because people won't slow down enough to do this. Then you sit with it and you're like, let me sit, think about the trigger. Let me think about the main emotion. Let me think about the main feeling that's coming out of all those. And then we start constructing the story that you're actually believing. Typically, the first thought or story that comes up is probably not going to be the first one. So then they write out a sentence, two sentences max, of basically a story. Like, what does this actually look like? What are they telling themselves about him, about them, et cetera? And they look at that and they start to see, okay, is this actually what my mind is thinking in that trigger moment? Or is this just logic? If it's logic, then it doesn't work. We have to go back to emotion. We have to stick on the emotional side. And so inside of this process, we're trying to go lower and lower and lower to figure out in that moment of trigger, what is the actual, like, almost primitive thought, in one sense, is going through a person's head that is the soul conscious, like, talk, like the verbal talk that's happening, the story, the lie, the idea, the thought that's going through their head in that moment. And then once we find that, you can always refine it and work on it, but once we find that, it'll typically be about one sentence. Then we take that one sentence and we put it on trial. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, we take that one sentence and underneath it, we list all of the facts, just facts, that either prove or deny. So it can't be longer than a sentence, because once you move past the sentence, you're no longer in facts. Then you're in fiction and fantasy and stories. So we list out, what are the facts that prove or deny that story? What are the facts that prove that you're not good enough? What are the facts that prove that, you know, he doesn't care about you? What are the facts of him showing up? Like, whatever it might be, we list out all the facts. Then is the time where we switch more logic and we're looking at it critically. And we're like, okay, do the facts prove or deny the story? Typically, as people are going through this the first time, it almost always denies the story they're telling themselves. Mm-hmm. So then they create a new story based on the facts. So it's a way to be able to walk people through an emotional side, then switches to a logic side, then brings it back into a sentence that they can plug in emotionally. Because otherwise, we found people would view their story from a logic standpoint of, well, I know I need to get over him. And that doesn't help anything, right? Like, that's someone just saying, like, just leave, just block, yeah, just go. Yeah. It doesn't really help them heal. We had to actually find a way to find, what is the internal dialogue? How do we actually put it against logic, put against facts? And then what is the new story that actually has to replace the old one? So when that trigger happens again, when they feel those emotions, when they start going down that path of those feelings, they can pause and they can be like, wait a minute, I've actually already done the work. Let me review the new story. And they start to memorize it, integrate it. And all of a sudden, that original story loses power the trigger loses its effectiveness. And then that's one of them that's cleared off. And then they continue doing that. And we start teaching ways to do it faster and faster. But that's the long example of how we initially teach it. So people understand when they get stuck, let's go through this entire process so you can actually find out what is underneath the surface so that we can actually work on transforming that story to provide you the direction that you actually want to go. That's what we call the freedom formula. That's one of the longer examples that we teach to help mm-hmm. people find the story so they can be liberated from it.
I love this. Thank you so much for sharing that in depth and allowing and even saying like grab a pen, you know, so that people write this down. I did it as you were saying it. And obviously, like, I know there's a level of taking a step back, but even in like, and I was doing it as you were talking about it. But when you got to the point of like, okay, well, let's put this on trial. You know, I only wrote down one or two things, but it like, it already reframed the story. And I know if I sat down and did this again, that I feel like it would be like really healing actually to get a more in-depth brand new story. You know, 100%. It was interesting. I'm glad you said the wheel of emotion too. And I have one on my desk. So I looked at it and angry was the word that I looked at. And then the three that came underneath that was violated, betrayed, and resentful. Mm-hmm. And I think like, so the one part I didn't do that I wrote it out was the I feel statements, I feel betrayed because, and I think like when I do give myself time to do this, which I will do later today, I can already see and feel how using those words over the big word of angry, because we're all angry, we're all mad, we're all this, we're all that. But like,
right.
Why do I feel betrayed? Why do mm-hmm. I feel resentful? And like, just because I am an open book, the trigger that came up for me was like, he always has to remind me it's all my fault is what I wrote down, you know, mm-hmm. which like leads to like a really tough thought. So thank you so much for sharing that. I know that's going to be super helpful for people. And I'll write up the formula in the show notes so people can also easily access it too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a piece of what we teach. We just do it way more in depth. So inside of some of the challenges and some of the things that we walk people through, like that's a week-long curriculum because we actually take time for breathing exercises, different meditation pieces, different aspects of like getting grounded of where you're at, what you're understanding, fleshing out different pieces. And then as people start to learn how to do it and learn how to actually find the story, they'll get to the place where they don't need that entire formula.
Yeah.
And then we walk them through a simple frame that we use inside of the software and the support system that we have that I use all the time, which is called stacking, mm-hmm. which basically just streamlines it in a much faster process. But what we found initially was we couldn't walk up to someone and ask them, hey, what's the story you're telling yourself? Because they had no clue coming out of gaslighting, fog, all the abuse. So we had to create something that they could actually tangibly find it and figure it out to like majority of the time. And if they couldn't, they could rework it and still figure it out. And then that started enabling people to identify the story they believed, which enabled us to radically shift their mindset, their thought process, and open up the gate of transformation. Because again, going back to what I mentioned earlier, like we are all just the stories that we tell ourselves. Like what you believe about you is just the story that you're telling you about yourself. So if we change that narrative, if we change what you're actually believing about you, it's amazing what can happen because then you're actually writing your own narrative. You're going the direction you want to go, no longer held back by limiting beliefs, his projection, his lies, your own stories. All those things start to get released and it just helps people blossom and grow into who they're actually called to be.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me today. I think it was so helpful and it's going to help so many people. Can you please share how people can find you and connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to know more about what I do and be able to connect, you can see me on any social media out there under just Raw Motivations. Mm-hmm. So feel free to look that up or you can go to rawmotivations.com. If you're currently listening and you're a woman that's trapped in narcissistic abuse and you resonate with what I said and what I'm going through and how I help people break free, then you can actually go to rawmotivations.com/breakthrough to be able to just get a list of a bunch of other people that I've helped work with that have been liberated and to be able to hear a short presentation of what I do and how I actually help liberate people every single day.
Awesome. And I'll be sure to put all your links in the show notes. So if someone's listening to this, they could just scroll down and go right to you.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. I love the way that Ben explains things. I hope this episode was helpful for you, just as I said at the start. And if you need support please reach out to Ben. Please reach out to me. My emotional abuse recovery course is on my website at emotionalabusecoach.com. And I wanted to take a moment here to share where I ended up when I did the Find the Story with Ben. And so the trigger that I named that I said was that it reminded me that it's all my fault. Where I ended when I worked through the emotions, how I felt, what's logical, I ended up with, I know I'm a good person and I don't hurt people. So therefore, this can't be all my fault. I did this again later in the day for another trigger that would come up often. And that trigger was, I can't believe that I was discarded. And when I worked through it and worked through it and worked through it, the thought that I ended up with at the end, the new thought was, I'm so grateful that I'm not on this roller coaster anymore. I do very similar work like this one-on-one with people. So if this is something that you feel like you need support on, like I said, reach out to Ben, reach out to me. There are other amazing people out there that either have programs or do one-on-one. Get the support that you need. Because similar to Ben's sentiment about him wanting to just to help as many people as possible in any way possible, I share that too. You know, I say this a lot, like this podcast, I do this because I want to help. And I really, really hope that this was helpful. Thank you as always for being here.